Been a year full of people on the streets already, and we're just a month into spring. Count on more demonstrations and marches ahead. Those include the People's Climate March coming up Saturday in Washington, D.C., with sister marches in many cities. And those in our region, those are planned for Petrolia, Eureka, Brookings, Medford, Roseburg, and Eugene. Our first guest is not only going to the big one in Washington. Her organization is one of the major ones involved in setting up the People's Climate March. Vien Trung is the executive director of Green for All, based in Oakland. That is a group founded by Van Jones. Vien, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good to be here.
So tell us a bit about Green for All. We got the basic history with Van Jones, but what was it set up to do?
We work on solutions at the federal, state, and local levels to make sure that the climate movement really reflects the needs in low-income communities and communities of color, and to make sure that leaders of color are at the forefront of the movement.
All right, so you're trying to, it's really, I hate to use the expression, kill two birds with one stone, but the fact is you're trying to get two things addressed with one set of actions.
That's right. We think the problems of poverty and pollution are so interconnected that they can only be solved if they're addressed together.
So give us an example. What kinds of solutions would address both issues at the same time?
For instance, one of the things that we want to look at is we've got to put a price on carbon. Oregon and California are both moving forward on this issue, carbon pricing. So let's make sure that polluters are responsible for the poison they put into the air, and let's make sure that we're directing the investments into the communities most impoverished and most polluted.
And so what's the success rate? At this point, you're in California, so you're closer to what's going on in the legislature there. Does it appear to have much traction?
We got it passed in California, and it's been running for a few years now. Because of the laws that a few of us helped to get passed, we were able to get over $1 billion invested in the poorest and most polluted communities. Things for public transportation, affordable housing, free solar and energy efficiency programs for low-income families that help them save hundreds of dollars on their energy bills. So it's working. It's really working really well.
We
want to help Oregon.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say we're working to help Oregon build a policy that reflects the needs of Oregonians now.
So if a carbon tax works over time and convinces people not to put out as much carbon, it reduces some of the revenue for the programs you're trying to use to help people who are affected by it.
Exactly. Let's make sure we're incentivizing big polluters to really clean up their act. And if they can't clean up fast enough, let's make sure that we're investing in solutions in the areas that are the most polluted. And that's how you really diversify the economy, right? You can build local jobs using the same investments.
What kinds of jobs do you foresee?
We've seen them already. We've seen a lot of jobs in construction, in the building of affordable housing, for instance, in the installation of solar on rooftops, in making sure that we have bus drivers for public transportation, in building the high-speed rail and the railways up and down the state of California. We've seen a lot of jobs. In fact, UC Berkeley said they have seen over 500,000 jobs created because of the laws that we've built in California.
500,000 jobs through that system in California?
500,000 jobs. Since the passage of this law called Assembly Bill 32, which was the basis creating this program.
Okay. Assembly Bill 32, which, of course, was on the ballot for repeal under Prop 23, wasn't it? It was the interesting anagram of 32 and 23, but that did not pass, and so it stays on the books.
That's right.
All right. So it's a busy week, it seems like. You have you had Earth Day events, and I believe you have something coming up today, too, a day of action on the Miners Protection Act.
Yes. So this has been a busy week. On Saturday, there was tens of thousands of people that came out across in San Francisco, but I would say there was a bunch of marches for the March for Science on Saturday. And then today we have action to protect miners and their pensions that they are in jeopardy of losing. And then on Saturday coming up, we're going to have the People's Climate March, which is coinciding with the 100th day of the Trump administration, which is the same night as the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's just going to be a lot of stuff happening.
Wow, sure is. So was the was there deliberate scheduling? I mean, there have been People's Climate Marches before, but was this one scheduled to coincide with the day 100 of the Trump administration?
It was fortuitous timing. The 100th day is usually when you can see what the president is doing, how he's doing, how successful he is. And because it was landing right around Earth Day here, we thought it was only appropriate to point out the fact that he's been showing how he's going to really target the environment and the planet and our future with his presidency. Some of the worst things that he's done so far has been taking down the Environmental Protection Agency. His proposed budget, in fact, proposes the biggest cuts to the EPA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. He's had executive orders taking down the Clean Water Act and the Clean Power Plan and the Clean Air Act. You know, it's just been pretty scary. And so the climate march is really to point out that we got to resist and we got to build towards a growing movement to stand up for our communities and to demand an economy that's really about supporting family-sustaining jobs with a clean and safe environment.
Even if the EPA cuts don't come to pass and the proposal is for a 31% cut, you do have the person in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency saying he doesn't think that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, or words to those effect a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. And his boss has said climate change is a hoax. And so there's a lot of things that are at risk here, and a lot of the changes that they're proposing is really irreversible and will have the impact felt not only in our lifetimes, but in the lifetimes of our kids. So it's pretty scary stuff, and we want to make sure we're bringing folks together because we want to make sure people understand this isn't just about areas that are most polluted. It's about all of our lives and all of our futures.
We're talking to Vian Trung on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the executive director of Green for All, based in Oakland. She's heading to Washington for the People's Climate March main event coming up on Saturday. There are satellite events in our region, in Petrolia, in Eureka at the Rhododendron Parade, in Brookings, in Medford, in Roseburg, and Eugene. If you have other communities involved in the People's Climate March, we'd like to hear from you, and we'd like to hear your thoughts on what Vian's talking about as well. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Alan in Jacksonville. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks a lot, Jeffrey. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the local event coming up on the 29th.
Okay, what do you got?
Well, as you mentioned, there are events happening all over the region, and ours is going to be at Pear Blossom Plaza in Medford, starting at 3 o'clock on Saturday the 29th. We'll have a few comments, and then we'll go for a march, which will take us through downtown. through downtown Medford and back to Pear Blossom Plaza for a program of speakers and music. We really encourage folks who are concerned about clean air, clean water, good jobs, protection for all of our communities and environment, plus investment in our future, to come out and join us to demonstrate their concern about the track record of the first 100 days of the Trump administration.
With some of the recent changes in downtown Medford, is Pear Blossom Plaza the Commons?
It's the grassy area just north of the Commons, and there's a band shell right there, which is what we're going to be using for the program.
And that's at 2 p.m., you said, on Saturday?
3 p.m. on Saturday.
Okay. All right, Alan, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Other calls and comments, welcome at 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Vian, I want to come back to you, and if you would give us a bit of a history of the People's Climate March. I mentioned there have been others.
So it was the first one, which is in 2014, and it was in New York. It was the largest climate march that has ever been created. 400,000 people came out. There were marches across the world. Many people from Hollywood A-list celebrities marching right next to, you know, mom and pops from frontline communities. People just turned out. The streets of New York were completely blocked. People couldn't move for hours. But it wasn't in a way that was stifling. It was in a way that was joyous and fun, because you began to see that, you know, this is one thing that really connects us no matter who we are. And it was for people who are thinking about whether or not they should come to a march, you should definitely come. It's a lot of fun. You see kids and posters and signs and art and music. It's just a lot of joy in the street.
Why is the People's Climate March just so close in time to the March for Science?
It was fortuitous timing. I was at the March for Science and spoke here in San Francisco, and the organizers behind it were moved by the Women's March and said, why don't we have a March for Science? And it was the first one. They timed it with Earth Day because it seemed appropriate, since science and climate change are so interlocked. And because of that, we said, let's continue building a momentum throughout the year. People's Climate March is then the following Saturday, and builds on the momentum that was created from last Saturday.
Are there any concerns about blurring the events in some people's minds and perhaps also getting, there go the marching liberals again sort of a reaction?
Well, you know, I think that there should be a lot of interconnections between science and climate, because what we know is that 99% of the scientists are telling you that climate change is real, despite what the current president of the United States has said. It's true that we are headed down towards a really dangerous path. So those two things, the marches should be interconnected. But no, I mean, we're expecting to see a lot of people take to the streets throughout the year. In fact, after their climate march, we're going to hear about a lot of actions turning out for workers' justice on May Day. It's just one of those things where we are inspired by the amount of people who are saying, we're not going to take these attacks on our human rights, on the future of our kids lying down. We're going to rise up and we're going to do something about it. And we're going to show that we're actively going to speak up and use our First Amendment rights to advocate for the change we want to see for our future.
Vian Trung, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of Green for All, based in Oakland, founded by Van Jones, one of the major groups involved in the People's Climate March Saturday in Washington, D.C., and other communities around the region. You just heard some detail on the Medford event. There are also events in Roseburg, Eugene, Brookings, Eureka, and Petrolia. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. So back to Washington, and you've singled out the president, certainly, but he's not the only one. I mean, what is it like to work for an organization that is aimed so squarely at trying to take on the issue of climate change and social justice as part of that, and yet have members of Congress showing up on the floor of their houses with snowballs and saying, well, look, here's proof that it's not getting warmer?
Yeah, you know, for us, we are living in the communities that are most affected by it. I myself am now speaking to you from my home. My zip code is projected to have lives that are 12 years less than more affluent communities, because we are so close to freeways and highways and polluting facilities. And that's just not right. And because we know that a lot of communities are so impacted by this, we want to make sure that we're really going out there and really bringing people to engage in a climate movement, because that's what makes a lot of these solutions better and more comprehensive. And so we have been making sure that we're very active in advancing solutions, from creating some of the biggest funds in history for low-income communities to really creating job training, workforce training, and even to supporting the Miners Protection Act. This is about making sure that we're really not leaving people behind, and we're really supporting people, whether you're a coal miner or whether you're a family in Flint. You deserve health and safety in a climate that is really reflective of the needs of your community.
I'm curious in particular how you address the issue of housing close to industrial operations that will put out some emissions. I mean, it's been well documented in many communities. Beyond Toxics talks about this in Eugene a fair amount, but the fact is that real estate does get cheaper when it gets closer to industrial facilities. So generally people who can afford less in the way of housing are going to end up living close to industrial facilities.
Right. And so we want to make sure that the housing itself is safe. We want to make sure that the creation of the housing has materials that are safe, so that when people are closing their doors, that they're not breathing in toxic chemicals and materials that oftentimes are living inside of homes. We also want to make sure that we're cleaning up the transportation that's going around them. A lot of times these diesel buses and these diesel trucks and these massive semis coming out of Port of Oakland around here, they are essentially moving power plants. They're spewing out diesel particulate matter into the home. So we want to make sure that we're cleaning them up and greening them up, from moving them into fuel-efficient vehicles to making sure that they're electrified or fuel cells or hydrogen. We want to make sure that the area around them is as clean as possible.
So obviously you work on legislative and policy issues at the same time as you work on the mass things like the People's Climate March. Do the mass events like a People's Climate March, does that light some people on fire? Do you get some good roll after an event like that that propels people into what you're doing?
We see it oftentimes. It begins to inspire people to really take action. It allows people to see that the mass mobilization provides really concrete ways for different sectors and organizations to work together. People build trust through the process. They learn how climate change, for instance, can affect affordable housing, like we just discussed, or transportation, or jobs, how it connects to coal miners and Flint families. But then they begin to see visually this these things are very interconnected. It helps people continue to move forward. We've seen a lot of people come to our organization, say, we want to volunteer, sign us up for the next action. And that's been continuing to build and build a more diverse climate movement.
How do you dispel what is often given as the trade-off between jobs and the environment, that that it's going to take a somewhat dirty environment to put a lot of people back to work, particularly in industrial sorts of places?
Yeah, I think that's just really dated thinking. That's just thinking from decades ago. What we now know is there are many times more jobs in solar and in wind than there are in coal. And in fact, the subsidies around coal is very expensive given the little amount of jobs they're creating. It's a funny story. I was getting in a cab and a stranger said, hey, can I hop in with you to go to the airport? I said, come on in. Turns out he's a coal miner from Australia. And he said, you know, the biggest threat to my job is not environmentalism. It's actually robotics and automation, because all the jobs in the coal mining field now is automated. And so that's where we have to begin thinking about what does the future economy look like? And how do we make sure that we're building in healthcare, security, and you know, jobs with some dignity and security for people who really need those jobs most? As I mentioned earlier, California has over 500,000 jobs in the clean energy economy. That's been documented. And these are good jobs with healthcare and wages and pensions. And so what we're showing here is that the economy, which is now the sixth largest economy in the world, does not have to take a hit just because we're investing heavily in climate. In fact, the reverse is true. We attract the jobs and the companies of the future to come to the state, and that's where you create a more robust economy.
Vian, has the growth in jobs in the clean energy industry in California come up as fast as the original projections, though?
I will have to get back to you on what the original projections are. What I do know is that just in the field of solar itself, the growth has outpaced many people, many projections. At first, there was the projection that the growth of solar wasn't going to be halting because the cost is so high. Nobody could have predicted how fast the cost of solar panels were going to drop. And because of that, there's been a spike in how fast the industry has grown. And we're expecting to see the same thing now in electric transportation. And that's just going to have to continue, or it's projected to continue moving forward as we're investing in different areas.
As long as we're talking about electric transportation, you had been talking about clean transportation a bit earlier, a couple times too. There is the whole issue of high-speed rail in California, which is sort of a truncated system as envisioned already anyway, where there's essentially the idea for building a test link north of Fresno. But it's also under lawsuit from a number of organizations that were not crazy about it going through certain bits of farmland. How difficult a process is it to get people on, well, I mean, almost literally to get them on board the train?
Well, I can't speak on the lawsuit itself because I'm not directly involved in it. But what we know is that the building out of the high-speed rail was looking at how do we make sure that the hubs, the stops, and especially through the rural communities, help to create kind of a transportation economic hub, creating new jobs in areas where, you know, as the stops are had, that the people can get off, buy stuff, that it can attract new businesses. When you talk about electric transportation, though, it's not just high-speed rail. You know, one of the programs that I helped you create was looking at how do we bring electric transportation to a farming community. And so I had a conversation with a leader from Huron, right outside of Fresno. It's a very rural farm worker community. And I asked, what's going on out here? What does transportation look and feel like? And he said, you know, for us to get from our town to the children's hospital, it takes 3 hours on a bus to get there one way, and they just don't have reliable public transportation. So what we figured out is we can actually create electric van fleets so that anybody who needed to can just get in, create an informal public transportation system that can take them to the city center, do shopping, go to the hospital if they need to, do what they need to, and that way they don't have to rely on a broken or unreliable public transportation system. So sometimes these things are not just Teslas, they're not just high-speed rails, they really are able to function for the needs of the unique community, including in farm worker community.
Vian Trung is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of Green for All, based in Oakland, which is one of the organizations sponsoring the People's Climate March in Washington, D.C. Are there ancillary activities to supplement the march? I mean, ways to carry the message more directly to members of Congress or anything like that? They will be in town.
There are a lot of people in town. In fact, there's two press conferences already about some of the advances in policy that will be taking place. One that is going to be tomorrow, Senator Merkley and Senator Sanders will be releasing their 100% renewable energy bill by 2050. And that's going to be supported by a number of organizations, including myself. So I'll be out there talking about why this is such an important policy for the community and the country today. We're also going to have a press conference with the Tri-Caucus, which is the Asian Pacific American, the Latino and Hispanic, and the Black Congress, talking about what's the importance of the climate movement to environmental justice communities. And there will be a number of things moving forward from there on out. Because of the timing with the 100th day, there will be a lot of media really covering the 100-day point for the administration. The focus around climate makes a lot of sense because this has been the biggest attack by this administration. So you'll be seeing a lot of media, too, on the streets in D.C. covering the story and talking to congressional members about why this is so important.
Okay, a lot of business coming up in Washington, D.C., which other also raises the question, if you and Van Jones are both going to be in Washington, D.C., who's staying in Oakland for events there?
Oh, well, we have a team, and that's what teams are for. So we will be in D.C. For the Climate March and for a number of events. There's also the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which Van will be at. There's also a few other events around that, which I will be at with him as well. And then in Oakland, there will be San Francisco March, and we'll have a contingent here attending that. There will be a lot of things happening around the country. I'm so glad that you're shining a light on the ones that are happening in Eugene and in Roseburg, where I have family members who live there. And it's just going to be a time and a day when I think people are going to celebrate where we are and the things that we've accomplished and why we need to continue to build on that by resisting the attacks that we're seeing on the climate.
Vien Trung is the executive director of Green for All, based in Oakland, off to Washington, D.C. for the People's Climate March on Saturday. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.